We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? Welcome. You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I am a singular host of two today. My name is Jimmy Wong.
And I am your second host of two.
Two of two. Vanilla, one green for us together, Jimmy and DJ.
Both 1-1 humans together with banding.
Finally, at last. Banding is back, by the way. It's kind of crazy. Okay, Today we are talking about the brand new commanders from the Adventures from the Forgotten Realms commander sets. So these are different than the legendary creatures in the main set. These come in the pre-cons. There are a lot of them. There's a lot of really interesting things to talk about. But before we get into it, make sure you check out cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our sponsor, our affiliate link. All you have to do is type that into your URL, hit enter, and blammo, you're on the website. You can buy magic products, singled, sealed product, whatever you'd like, because it's the place to do it, and you're simultaneously supporting the podcast while you do so. We're going to talk about lots of new cards today. Probably you want to add some of those to your cart. Great place to do so is cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Of course, while you're there, you can also pick up some Ultra Pro product who helped sponsor this show, or you can just go to your local game store and buy Ultra Pro there as well, because look, lots of really cool sleeves, lots of really cool playmats, the art from AFR, as well as the secret lairs. The only place you can get this really cool stuff is on official Ultra Pro product. So thanks to them, as always, for sponsoring the show. And finally, last week's support of the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. We shout out one lucky patron every single episode. So this week's episode is dedicated to
Jacob Heckman. Jacob, Heck. You rock.
Man. Sure, no one's ever done that before. Okay, let's dive right into it. That's what deck right. are we starting off with today, DJ?
Yeah, we're going to start off with Dungeons of Death. This is the Esper deck, you know, so we're going to take a look at the legendary creatures from there. And sometimes, you know, the face commander is part of the pre-con, so there's a little bit of build around, but a lot of times the other commanders, the other legendary creatures in there can make whole decks of their own. So we're going to get into detail and talk about those decks. But let's start off with the face commander.
Yay.
It's Sephiroth of the Hidden Ways. White, blue, black for a 2/3 legendary human wizard. Whenever one or more creature cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, venture into the dungeon. This ability triggers only once each turn. It also says that whenever you complete a dungeon, return target creature card from your own graveyard to the battlefield.
Okay, so that's a really strong reanimate effect. Going to the dungeons, there are three available dungeons. Two of them have four rooms, and one of them technically one of them, you can do it three rooms, but the other one, the Dungeon of the Mad Mage, has the most rooms. But going into the dungeon, I've learned this now by playing a lot of AFR Limited, it's actually, if you build your deck around it, you can get through the dungeons pretty quickly, and especially because Sephiroth allows you to do so on other players' turns, as long as you can get a creature into your graveyard from anywhere.
Yeah, I think that this is interesting. As we're looking at all of these cards, we're seeing three different types of dungeon-like matters decks. Mm-hmm. Some of them are the like hyper-efficient, almost combo dungeons, where you're going through the dungeons as like a combo win, or you're going through the dungeons as super fast as you can. And then there's others, which is like value dungeons, where you're like, okay, there's a lot of dungeon matters cards. I'm going to go through the dungeon, but it's not going to interrupt my major game plan. And then finally, there's just some, I'm just going to tack on venturing to the dungeon, and I might go through a single dungeon in a game.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lots of ways to enter the dungeon. Let's talk about some of those. These are new cards. The first is Radiant Solar, which is a big angel that says whenever this or another non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, venture into the dungeon, which is great, which means that if you have three creatures enter, that's three times you're entering into different stages of the dungeon. That's a lot per turn. And it also triggers when you play this card as well. Even better, it has an ability for white. You can discard Radiant Solar, and then you venture into the dungeon and gain three life. Which, by the way, works very well. Sephiroth, that's two triggers right there, getting Solar into the graveyard as well as on the actual card itself.
So one of the reasons why I called out Radiant Solar in this is because being able to venture into a dungeon more than once a turn is very good in venturing decks.
Right.
And your commander, unfortunately, just says like once a turn. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So if you have Radiant Solar, you're like, okay, I'm going to play this, flicker this, blink this, you know, reanimate this, and then suddenly you're moving through the dungeon at a really good pace.
Yeah, not to mention, you can do stuff like sacrifice a creature you play, and then play another one, and blam, you finished it, and then that creature you sacked can now get brought back to the battlefield. So there's a lot of value definitely packed into the Sephiroth deck. There's also a card called Asurirok, Ace Rerak, the Archlich, which is this really interesting legendary creature for 2 and a black. When it enters the battlefield, if you haven't completed the Tomb of Annihilation, which is the dungeon that kind of hurts you and your opponents the most, you can actually bounce it to your hand and you venture into the dungeon. And so that's really interesting. This is a card that for 3 mana, you can play it and you just go into the dungeon and it goes back to your hand as long as you don't finish that Tomb of Annihilation dungeon.
Yeah, you can go into like the big one, Tomb of the Mad Mage or whatever, yeah, and just keep going through. And if you're interested in this as a commander, go ahead and check out our other episode where we talk about the legendary creatures mm-hmm. from the normal set, because this can be a combo enabler where you just venture in over and over and over again. And so this can be a powerful piece in Sephiroth's deck as well.
Yeah, also there's a new deck in Legacy with Alurin that lets you cast creatures for 3 for free. So you just play Asterisk 1,000 times and blammo, you've just won the game because you've drained it.
Omniscience, Alurin, a Rooftop Storm because it's a zombie.
Yeah.
Know, cost reduction effects. There's tons of ways to make this thing really powerful.
Yeah.
One thing though to note is that a lot of the dungeon support pieces are really powerful. Maybe not necessarily your commander as much, because it's got that once per turn clause on it.
Yep.
Well, I think we want to break that, right?
Yeah, I think absolutely. One of the ways to do so, it's in the deck, it's Hama Pashar. I also played it on the Game Nights episode. It just allows you to trigger the rooms in the dungeons twice, so it's just a ton of value packed onto
that. So there we go. Now that makes the slow, methodical movement even better because you're triggering twice.
Yeah, very explosive as well. And if you want to get creatures into your opponent's graveyards, one of the ways I would add a lot of cards to this deck, I would just put up a ton of cycling cards in. Creatures that have plane cycling or swamp cycling or just regular cycling. It's a way to discard it at instant speed. You get the value from drawing the card from the cycle, and you're going to trigger your commander.
Nice. I think there's a particularly powerful card that I think goes really well in this deck, and that's Tortured Existence.
It's
black for an enchantment. You can pay a black, discard a creature card. Thumbs up. We like that. Return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Oh, double thumbs up. That means you can create a cycle, a loop, and over again.
And you can basically get this trigger from your commander on every single turn. So you're actually moving through the dungeon, not just like once on your turn. It's like, oh, it's Jimmy's turn. I'm going to do Tortured Existence. It's Josh's turn. I'm going to cycle something. You know, I'm going to Tortured Existence again on Ashlyn's turn. Yeah. You know, that's the kind of rhythm you want to get into when you're moving through dungeons.
Yeah. People definitely mentioned this a lot in our last episode as well when we talked about Sephiroth a bit more. There's also cards like Sir Conrad the Grim, which is a payoff card. This card has a lot of similar text. Whenever another creature dies or a creature card is put into a graveyard from anywhere other than the battlefield or a creature card leaves your graveyard, Sir Conrad deals 1 damage to each opponent and you can make everyone mill a card for 1 in the black. So obviously a lot of synergy here. This doesn't necessarily get cards into your graveyard except for the mill part, but this does give
get you there, right?
It'll get you there, but it's a little expensive, right? There are ways to discard cards and get more value than just forcing that. But in a pinch, this will probably help you get there. But more importantly, this is just a way similar to an Aristocrats deck to just very slowly, but methodically and efficiently kill everyone.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we can play a card like Doom Whisper.
Doom.
Basically, it's a big flying nightmare demon, but it's got an activated ability. You can pay 2 life to surveil 2.
Mm.
That is, you look in the top 2 and you can keep them on top, or you can put them into the graveyard.
Ah, very nice.
You can do this on everyone's turn.
Yep. And then, of course, cards like Teferi, Master of Time. This is just a behemoth of a planeswalker because you can activate him at instant speed on other players' turns, and his +1 is draw a card and discard a card. So.
Yeah, the deck came with a lot of looters, and you just want to like punch up your looter to be Teferi so you could loot on everyone's turn and move through the dungeon faster.
Definitely. And then once you get those cards into your graveyard, you want more ways to reanimate them, obviously, because that seems like it's stabled onto the commander. You're probably going to build some amount of that into it. So reanimation effects seem really good in this deck too. Victimize is in the deck, I believe. Doomed Necromancer is a fun card too from the commander sets.
It's a creature that does it, so that's kind of nice to have the creature to discard or, you know, have it on the battlefield to bring it back.
And when it sacks itself, it's going to trigger your thing. It's going to get a creature back, so it's going to do everything you want to. Priest of Felrite's a very similar card.
I like that because it has unearth. So if you pitch it earlier on, you can unearth it from your graveyard to get that value.
Yeah, and if you're going to be looting a lot, that's obviously great. Karmic Guide as well. This is also in the deck. So, you know, lots of big creatures. I think Reanimator and just that sort of effect is one of my favorite things to do in Commander because you're cheating mana costs. Mm-hmm. You're getting something super scary out early. You have access to so many cards.
Yeah, that was actually one of my gripes about the deck as a pre-con is that it didn't really have those big creatures. Like, I didn't have this cool payoff when I reanimated. I just got another like value creature back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think the one big creature that they included was Ashen Rider.
Ashen Rider. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I included Shieldred Whispering One as one of my like big reanimator targets.
Nice.
If you had to put a reanimator target in, what would you put in? What would your go-to reanimator target be?
The first thing I thought of, because you said Shieldred, it's a Praetor. There's also Jyn-Ktaxis.
Jyn-Ktaxis?
But I'm not going to play that card because I'm not that mean, but I'm still pretty mean, so I would do Elesh Norn instead.
Do you know why that's actually quite good? Is because you have a lot of dinky creatures too in this deck, you know,
right.
Because you have the things where it's like, oh, I'm just going to cycle this, you know, mm-hmm. or I'm going to do that. So Elesh Norn pumping up your whole team, we can make them all a little bit more relevant.
Yeah, your Priest of Fellwright's a 2-2, your Doom Necromancer's a 2-2. Those creatures are now 4-4s, and you're probably killing half the things around the board, too,
because of
the
minus 2,
minus 2. Yeah, pretty nice. What would you put in?
Well, besides Shieldred, I think like a recent printing, I really like Archon of Cruelty and like seeing what that thing is doing.
Yeah, it's from Modern Horizons 2. And when it enters the battlefield or attacks, target opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker, discards a card, and loses 3 life. And you get a draw card and gain 3 life. So let's not lie, right? The 3 life that you're draining and the 3 life you're gaining there, that's big. That's going to make a big difference over the course of the game, especially if you're going to sort of like throw it back out and just do it over and over again.
Yeah, it gets dead, but then you bring it back again. It has a trigger.
Yeah.
They leave it on the battlefield. It still attacks and gets a trigger. I like that.
Yep, yep. Okay, so that's going to do it for Sephiroth. I actually kind of want to build this deck now. I played it on game nights, and after playing enough AFR Limited, I really like the dungeon mechanics, and I think there's a lot of cool ways to sort of do the dungeons a bunch, and the incidental value you get, it's no joke.
Yeah, I think that, and I played it as well on Extra Turns,
yeah.
And so I really liked it too, but I want to just like explore all the cards. Like, I want to tune it up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, hopefully we get some more returning to the Forgotten Realms in the future.
Get another dungeon, maybe?
More dungeons, yeah. There's so many. The lore of D&D is vast. Okay, next up we have the other sort of shiny face card in the deck. It's Nihilor. This is 2 white, blue, and a black for a 3/5 legendary creature horror. When Nihilor enters the battlefield, for each opponent, tap up to 1 untapped creature you control. When you do, gain control of target creature that player controls with power less than or equal to the tapped creature's power for as long as you control Nihilor. And whenever you attack with a creature that an opponent owns, you gain 2 life and that player loses 2 life. So this goes in the battlefield. You can tap Nihilor itself to do this, but you gain control of a creature with power less than or equal to the tapped creature. And then as long as Nihilor is around, you have that you have control of that creature.
So on the plus side, you do get to steal more creatures than the average like spell that this costs. You know, a lot of times you play a 4-drop or 5-drop, you steal 1 creature or 1 thing.
Sword of Temptation, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, stuff like that. So this could steal 3 things, but it's got that big downside of needing like high-powered creatures.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, you can't take everything. Now, Nihilor itself with 3 power can probably take a lot of the utility stuff around the table, but if someone plays an Elesh Norn.
Like an angel or something.
An angel.
Oh my gosh,
thing.
An Elesh Norn would be horrible.
Horrible, yeah, because it makes your creature smaller. Stuff. Yeah, so that's the worst card against this deck. But
we get it now, right? Like, if I play my Archon of Cruelty, like, you need to have a 6-drop. You're a 6-power
thing, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you're not just getting exactly what you want all the time.
And if Nihilor dies, that creature goes back and all your hard work is undone. And you do have to tap a creature to do so, so you leave yourself slightly more open. Now you can block the creature you just took, but you're going to draw a little bit of ire once you start stealing other people's stuff. So how do you steal things and keep them around? Because that seems like where I want to be.
Yeah, so we get a lot of inspiration from Mariachi Rebreet, which is another Esper stealing creatures style deck. And so there is a lot of precedence when it comes to this stealing stuff. It's an art form. and so some of the things that you can do is that you can, we could blink Nihilor.
Right.
So that we can steal new things, you know, that would be pretty good. But also we can steal something and then with certain blink effects, we can blink the thing that we stole and it'll leave and come back under our control.
Right.
But it takes a certain type of card to be able to do that.
Yeah, so you're looking for that text specifically, return this creature onto the battlefield under your control, not owner's control.
Yeah, so why don't you give us an example of that one. So
Deadeye Navigator, well, I'll just list them all off here.
Sure.
There are a bunch. Deadeye Navigator, Thassa's Deep Dwelling, Ghostly Flicker, Conjurer's Closet. Nightmare Shepherd, and those are all ways to get cards under your control. A card that doesn't do this is Teleportation Circle, which is a newer card from AFR, because it says, at the beginning of your end step, exile up to one target artifact or creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. So Teleportation Circle is still great in those Blink decks, but it's not as good here with Nihilor, because it can really only target Nihilor with this and get that back. So you want to look for that text under your control. Marchesa decks know this feeling quite well as well.
Yeah, so I think that the stealing whole aspect is a little bit clunky, but it's got that other text, you know, the draining aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that could be an area that this distinguishes itself from other cards.
Yeah, that means you're going to want to steal more things from your opponents then, yeah. Right? So what are some ways to do that? This next card, I wish I saw more get played more because I really like it.
I love this card. Ape Snake. It's Thieving Amalgam. 5BB for 6/7. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, you manifest the top card of that player's library.
Oof.
Yeah. So you put it onto your side of the battlefield, face down, it's a 2/2. Whenever a creature you control but don't own dies, its owner loses 2 life and you gain 2 life.
Wow. So really similar text to Nihilor there.
Yeah. So you're attacking with creatures that you don't own. So you're getting the Nihilor triggers. And then if they happen to die, then you get the Thieving Amalgam triggers, and actually you just amass a huge army of creatures with just these two cards put together.
Yeah, because notably the rules here are a little weird, but it's because your opponent owns the card and it's a creature, it becomes a creature that they own because it's tied to the card, I believe. I'm not a judge, but that's how it works. Agent of Treachery is also an incredible card that rewards you for having cards that you're
creating. Because we're going to steal. We're going to get that other, the elusive other trigger.
Yeah, drawing remember, like, 3 cards.
I know. Like, we play it because we like stealing stuff, but then we're going to draw the 3 cards.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, if you're going to play any of that reanimation package here, like we talked about with Sephiroth, you have ways of getting this on the battlefield for cheap because it's a 7-mana card otherwise. Same goes for Bribery. I love this card quite a bit. What's your favorite stealing effect, DJ? If you had to choose.
We know I like Hostage Taker, but do you know what? I think that for style points, I'm going to go with Empress Galena.
Style points, more like salty points. That card is so powerful. It's so good.
You
love
just
it.
Activate it and you steal a legendary creature. So everyone's looking in their command zone being like,
Maybe I don't play that.
Maybe I don't play this. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I really like this card. It's one of my pet cards. It's Thalicos Deceiver.
Huh.
It's a 1/1 that costs 3 in a blue with shadow. So it can only block or be blocked by creatures with shadow, which typically means literally nothing on the board. And whenever Thalicos Deceiver attacks and isn't blocked, you may sacrifice it. If you do, gain control of target creature. So you just gain control of it. It's great in Marchesa because you get a +1/+1 counter on it. It comes back to the battlefield. Also great in decks like this that, you know, gives you ways to reanimate or bring it back to the battlefield with your victimizes.
Love that tech.
Yeah, very interesting. And then there's also Memnarch if you're in mono blue and can generate a
ton
of mana.
Well, you called my pick salty and you're over here touting
true.
Memnarch?
Yeah, oh, what can I say? Gosh. I am a hypocrite. So that's Nihilor in a nutshell. Again, I think the whole power thing is going to be the toughest thing to get around.
No,
you
right.
want big creatures to tap down, but you also don't want to tap down your big creatures. So it's not... Nihilor might be a better fit into a Send Triplets type deck, or even a Mariyuki deck, but... It's a little hard, I think, to build this one on your own.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Next up, we have a mono blue legendary creature. It's Min, Wily Illusionist. Min is 1BB for a 1/3 legendary gnome wizard. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, create a 1/1 blue illusion creature token with this creature gets +1/+0 for each other illusion you control. Whenever an illusion you control dies, you may put a permanent card with mana value less than or equal to that creature's power from your hand onto the battlefield.
Oh, now we're talking because the power gets buffed by the number of illusions there are.
So this does a lot. And actually, if you're interested in seeing an entire deck tech on this, head on over to the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel where I talk about the entire deck from beginning to end. But let me give you a taste of it right now.
Okay, so illusions. Are there a lot of illusions? Are there good illusions that we can be playing?
There are surprisingly good illusions.
Nice.
You can imagine. So one thing about illusions, though, is that they are vulnerable in many situations. Like you
right.
think about
the typical text on them, right?
Is exactly.
That they will
when die. You target them, you have to sacrifice it. But the trade-off is that they usually are pretty buff in terms of power and toughness,
mm-hmm.
you know? So basically that works in your favor in this situation too, because if you have a, you know, this is not like the pinnacle of illusions, but a Phantasmal Dreadmaw.
Oh yeah.
A 4-mana 6/6, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And it just happens to die. You get to drop a 6-drop or less. Oh. like onto the battlefield.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So this pressures life totals. It buffs all your other illusions. It's a pretty interesting effect.
Are you looking to play big illusions as well as big creatures? Because you know that a Phantasmal Dreadmaw or a Toothy imaginary friend.
Oh man, Toothy is going to go crazy in this deck. I mean, let's just read Toothy and let's imagine how it fits into this deck.
Okay, so Toothy is 3 and a blue. It pairs with Pierre Imaginary Rascal, but we won't talk about Pierre. Whenever you draw a card, put a +1/+1 counter on Toothy imaginary friend. Whenever Toothy leaves the battlefield, draw a card for each +1/+1 counter on it. So that works really well with Min because you want to draw a bunch of cards, right?
Yeah, and actually the deck is going to be built around drawing 2 cards a turn, even on your opponent's turn. And so Toothy's going to get huge. If Toothy ever dies, you're going to be able to put something on the battlefield and draw a huge amount of cards.
So Toothy's great. It enables
and
your strategy.
It pumps everything else too. All your other illusions, you're pumping as well.
Wow, that's great. So Toothy is like one of those perfect fit cards in decks where it satisfies all the different parts of what Min's trying to do, because you need to have card draw in order to get the things to dump onto the table when your illusions die.
Yeah, and you can support your illusions. There's a very famous illusion lord. What is it? It's Lord of the Unreal.
Yeah, it's blue for a creature wizard. It's a 2/2 and illusions you control get +1/+1 and have hexproof.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Hexproof all your illusions.
Yeah.
But look, you're probably going to build your deck so that you have a lot of card draw, a lot of different ways to draw cards, not just on my turn, but your turn. And so hopefully you're going to get your commander out and you're going to start creating these illusions. And if you have, you know, 3 illusions, they're suddenly like 4 ones.
Right.
Like that they get exponentially bigger when it comes to damage. You know, you draw 2 more cards and then suddenly you have the 5 ones, like 6 ones, 7 ones. Like these things can get huge and smash in.
Yeah.
You know?
That's actually really great. So drawing 2 cards is really important in this deck, obviously. Reconnaissance Mission is an enchantment for 2 blue-blue. Basic text, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. So when you're swinging in with like 3 8-1s, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 8-1s or whatever, people probably don't want to be able to block all of them. Even if it's like 4 4-1s, you know, there's going to be a good chance that one of them gets through. You can draw a card, trade a bunch, and then that just sort of keeps your train going, makes more illusions, refills your board. You're okay trading off creatures.
Yeah.
And you can cycle this card for 2 mana. So on your turn, you also can, if you can't play it, just cycle it and you get that second card.
Exactly.
Draw.
On an opponent's turn, when you're trying to get 2 cards, but you're like, I only got one, I'm just going to cycle it and be able to get that trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Distant Melody is another one. This is one of the big card draw effects, but basically it's,
3 and a blue?
Yeah, 3 and a blue. Choose a creature type, draw a card for each permanent you control of that type. You're an illusion deck. So you just like name illusion, you draw 3 or 4 cards, and then you make an illusion, you know, you're fine.
Yeah. Kindred Discovery. This is a bit more expensive, but it's very similar. When it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type. Obviously, you're going to choose humans. No, I'm just kidding. And then whenever a creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield or attacks, draw a card. So, wow, you're drawing a card, you're making an illusion, you're drawing another card.
I like how you can, like, it's really cool because you can draw cards on an opponent's turn to create an illusion, and then that comes into the battlefield and then draws you another card.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it just can, like, feed itself. And remember, we're talking about all these cards that you draw, but if they ever answer your board, if they ever start blocking your illusions or doing stuff to them, you just start unloading these cards on the battlefield. You just drop permanents on the battlefield.
Yeah, man, it makes it so tough for them to block if they're like, you could drop a Jyn Kataxias with how big that illusion is.
Heck yeah.
And because Min gives +1/+0 for each illusion, that means their toughness stays at 1, so you're going to want to Skull Clamp them.
That's right. Skull clamp them up, draw 2 cards, create another one.
Now,
it's just
you can't do this to all the illusions. Like your Colossal Dreadmaw will get sacrificed the moment you target it with your Skull Clamp, but the illusions that Min creates don't have that very typical text.
That's true.
Which is kind of cool.
But I mean, if you want to cheat something big into play, you equip the Skull Clamp, you don't draw 2 cards, but it still dies, and then you get to drop a 6-drop.
Yep.
That's pretty crazy too. There are also, so we talked about some ways to get it on opponent's turn, like Consecrated Sphinx, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You draw a card, I'll draw 2, I get my trigger. You know, another one would be something like Frantic Search.
Right.
You know,
3 mana, draw 2, discard 2, untap up the 2 lands. 3 lands, pretty good card there, I love that. Brainstorm as well on someone else's turn.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's drawing 2 cards. And then Archmage's Charm is a newer one, and you can just blue to have target player draw 2 cards.
Yeah, but then it also has that other ability of like, oh, I steal your soul ring.
Steal a mana value 1 or less, not right? Land, yeah. Or counter your spell, take
or,
your exploration. Yeah. So many things you can take with our
that card's is, I think, underplayed. I think it's great.
Notably, because it's a mono blue deck, you can just play cards that say blue on them without blinking an eye.
I know, right? It's great.
And then I guess you need some win conditions. Obviously, if someone can chump block all day, it's not good for you, even if you're dumping bigger and bigger things on the table. But Tetsuko Umezawa, Fugitive, creatures you control with power or toughness, 1 or less, can't be blocked.
Oh, your illusions are all toughness X1s. Of one. They're X1. So you just make them all unblockable out of nowhere.
Yep.
I also like Perplexing Test. Basically, it's a bounce spell. 3 blue for an instant. Choose one. Return all creature tokens to their owner's hand, or return all non-token creatures to their owner's hands.
Oh, that's going to wipe the board a lot of the time.
Except for your little high-powered illusion, so you also can swing in for damage.
That's an instant?
That's an instant.
Wow, that's pretty good. I'm gonna start studying. There's also Wonder, giving everything flying. And look, if you're going to cheat anything into play, that means you can play cards that have Suspend on them and other things that you wouldn't be playing otherwise, right?
But you know what I think that one of the defaults are that really makes this card great is just lands. You're like, oh, like I just have 2 illusions on the battlefield. Fine, right. ramp, 2 lands.
Blue mana ramp, everybody. We did it.
So I think that Min is really fun. And if you're interested in a more fleshed out deck, go ahead on over to the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel and check it out.
Do it. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for the Dungeons of Death deck. Pretty fun stuff overall. Yeah. Min seems like a really cool sort of mono blue build and probably fits into some other decks as well. All right, let's move on to the Aura of Courage deck. This is the deck that Josh played on game night, and it's featuring number one, Galea, Kindler of Hope. By the way, we did deck techs and sort of deck upgrade videos for all these decks, so if you want to go deeper on the face cards like Galea or Sephiroth, those are the videos to go to. Galea, Kindler of Hope, this is also a preview card. 1 green, blue, and a white. So that's Bant colors for a 4/4 Elf Knight. With Vigilance, you may look at the top card of your library at any time, and you may cast Aura or equipment spells from the top of your library. When you cast an equipment spell this way, it gains. When this equipment enters the battlefield, attach it to target creature you control.
So playing cards off the top of your library is card draw.
Yep.
You know, because it's entering the battlefield and you get to then draw a brand new card off there.
And so, equipping for free is cheating a mana costs.
So that's pretty powerful. And so we want to build our deck around those two things, because if you just got a bunch of creatures and instants in your deck, well, you're not cheating card draw or, you know, mana cost.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. So you want a lot of equipment and auras. So we're not telling you guys something crazy out here. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So pick the best auras and equipments that go in your deck. And so I think that the best equipment to put in are ones that are low to cast and have high equip costs, because then you're cheating the most mana.
Yep. And 2 of those are Colossus Hammer and Commander's Plate. Both those are one drops with, I think, Colossus Hammer is 8 equip costs and Commander's Plate is equipped 5 unless it's under Commander, which is 3. So just blam, throwing that in there and casting it off the top of your library. Very powerful, and skipping that equip cost is typically, that's one of the things that really puts equipment decks back, is having to waste a half your mana just equipping things and then having the chance of getting blown out by a removal spell afterwards.
Yeah, for sure. 2 cards that have still high casting costs but also high equip costs are Argentum Armor and Cauldra Complete.
Yes, Cauldra Complete, what a great card.
I know, right? Just imagine equipping that to something on the battlefield. It's just going to be so beefy.
Yeah, very beefy. And if you just play it by itself too, it comes in with a little germ. There's a new card called Belt of Giant Strength. It's 1 in the green, and it gives in the creature toughness 10/10, but the equip cost is 10. And it costs less for the power of the thing you're equipping it to. So even later in the game, if this is just in your hand, you play it for 2 mana, let's say you have a Galea with like 5 equipment on it, it is like a 12/4 or whatever, you can just equip it for free.
Yeah, but then it's not really buffing it. You have to buff it in other ways to be able to save that mana. You know what I mean? It's not the most efficient of pieces of equipment.
But anything that says +2/+2, now that has a base power of 10/10, all those things are going to add to it. +1/+1 counters are going to work even better.
Exactly. Like we like it on Hydras and stuff like that. Zeros that have 10+1/+1 counters sold.
Yeah.
For sure. So if we are playing off the top of our deck, then top deck manipulation gets even better. So fetch lands, hey, this is something bad on top of my deck. I'm going to crack a fetch land, shuffle things up. Oh, now there's an aura that I can cast.
Yep.
Sweet.
Even Evolving Wilds, right? Terramorphic Expanse. These are cards I think you would play in this deck, even though they're not, you know, the original fetch lands. But on a budget, definitely this is one of those fun decks I think you can build.
Yeah. Sensei's Divining Top helps shuffle things around. Oracle of Moldiah. Yeah, like get the land off the top so that you can go one deeper, then get the ore off the top.
One deeper. Like Sylvan Library, Brainstorm, Brainstone, lots of different things you can do there.
Good stuff.
And then you want some redundancy for the equipping part of this thing, because if Galea's not out and you all of a sudden you're stuck with a 10 equip cost thing on the battlefield, that doesn't feel good. So you have cards like Halvar, God of Battle, which is from Kaldheim, and on the front side has a very important line of text. At the beginning of combat, you may attach target aura or equipment attached to a creature you control to target creature Shitty Control. So this can switch stuff around on the battlefield and skip that equip cost and also make blocking really tough for your opponents, I think.
Yeah, when Craig was doing the upgrade video for this, he noticed that there was a kind of a lower creature count than he would have liked, and he felt like that some of the equipment were really clunky to get on other creatures.
Right.
And so he wanted ways to have creatures to be able to get those equipment and be able to connect them a little bit better, you know? He put in like armored Sky Hunter.
Yep. Very similar to what Galea does. It's a 4-mana flyer. When it enters the battlefield, you look at the top 6 and then you put an aura or an equipment onto the battlefield and then you immediately attach it to a creature you control. So very similar to what Galea does.
Perfect. Like card draw, re-equipping. It's redundancy that we need. Arden, Intrepid Archaeologist, has you moving around equipment. So again, you're cheating that equip cost. It's something that your commander is already doing, but this, you know, lets you do it in a different way.
Yep.
Sigarda's Aid, you know, if you end up with a Colossus Hammer in your hand, you know, you could wait until you have a Brainstorm and put it back on top, or you just cast it with Sigarda's Aid and it'll just immediately equip to where you want it to
go. Sigarda's Aid is just the go-to. It's a white mana for an amazing enchantment, and it just helps you cheat all of those equip costs, and you can cast them auras and equipments as though they had flash. So that means that you can pass the turn with all your mana up, Galea, looking at the top card of your library, and now you have an extra card in your hand and you can just really get people out of nowhere.
Right. So this is essentially a Voltron strategy. So there are some cards that are really good in just Voltron strategies in general. What are a couple that work really well?
Slash the Ranks. It's a 3-white-white board wipe. Destroy all creatures and planeswalkers except for commanders. So if your commander has 15 things on it and you want to wipe the board, this is a pretty good place to start.
Also things like Winds of Abandon. This is just a simple removal spell, but you can overload it and just exile everyone else's creatures. Yes, they get to go search for basic lands, but really you've cleared the way for your commander to start smashing in.
Yeah, at really high powered tables too, Winds of Abandon, when it gets overloaded, people won't be able to fetch out more
right?
3 to 4 basics, and wiping the entire board and maybe being able to swing in with your Voltron commander and just take a player out right then and there is definitely worth it.
Yeah, that's what you want, this sort of interruption so you can take a player out.
Yep. And then Winds of Wrath is similar. It's 3-white-white. Destroy all creatures that aren't enchanted and they can't be regenerated. So again, that's something that you'd want to do because Galea's probably going to be wearing an aura on it at some point.
For sure. So, I mean, speaking of them, you know, we want some auras to play off the top as well. So far, we've kind of focused a little bit on equipment, but this does synergize with both of them. It's an interesting thing that Wizards is doing to sort of say, hey, aura of an equipment, they can play together, you know, because usually before you wanted to just do all auras or just do all equipment.
Yeah.
So it's nice and interesting to see how they kind of overlap a little bit. But there's some great auras out there that help you cantrip when you play them off the top.
Oh, okay.
Like Unquestioned Authority, I think, is one of the best ones.
Yep. It draws you a card for 2 and a white, and it also enchant auras to give that creature protection from creatures, which is, again, don't underwrite protection from. This lets it attack into almost everything.
Yeah, like they just can't block. Like there's no more blocking involved. It just is able to get that damage through. But the thing is that added benefit is like the cantripping. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just being able to play it off the top and be able to draw.
Yep.
Kenris Transformation is a removal spell, but it's an aura, so you can play it off the top, and it draws you a card.
Yep, love that one a bunch. Rune of Might is also a cantrip. It draws you a card, and then it gives the creature +1/+1, and very importantly, Trample. Mm. Ooh, very, very good. Trample, when you have a big creature and it can block, if you don't have your sort of protection froms or whatever to get across, is definitely a way to end the game there.
I think that we have some aura-based card draw. I think some aura-based ramp would be good. Things like Utopia Sprawl, Fertile Ground, Wild Growth.
Yep.
You know, all of those things, you put them on a land, they tap for more. You know, Land Destruction isn't seen a lot in our format, so I think that these enchantments on lands are pretty safe.
Yeah, I really like this addition here because let's say you're only going with the equipment strategy, you're putting up between 9 to 12 equipment in your deck maybe, and the chances of that being on the top of your deck aren't that high. But if you can really load your deck up with auras like these enchant lands, then that means that you have a much higher chance of playing Galea, looking at the top card, and being able to play that card and really get the advantage to its full maximum.
Yeah, I mean, you can have tons of different auras serving different purposes in your deck. Like your removal can suddenly be auras as well.
Yeah, Imprisoned in the Moon is an aura enchantment aura that turns a creature into the moon. Just kidding, it turns them into a colorless land. Corrupted Conscience is an amazing card that gives the creature infect that you steal.
Guess where that suggestion came from?
Oh, Craig Blanchett, anybody? Yeah, and then Song of the Dryads, it's an enchanted enchantment aura that turns a permanent into a land.
You know, sometimes these auras, like, like you feel like, oh, they're lesser, like they're pacifism. They're not as good as the other ones. But a lot of times these Song of the Dryads and Imprisoned of the Moon, they're pretty premium pieces of removal. So I'm pretty happy to have them in my deck.
Yeah, me too. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for Galea. A lot to talk about there. Great card. Let's move on to the next card. This is Storvald, Frost Giant Jarl.
Storvald is 4 green, white, blue. So that's 7 mana for a 7/7 giant. It has ward. Does it have ward 7? No, ward 3.
3, yeah.
Why doesn't it have ward 7?
Don't ask me.
Ward 3. Other creatures you control have ward 3. Whenever Storvald enters the battlefield or attacks, choose one or both. Target creature has base power and toughness 7/7 until end of turn. Target creature has base power and toughness 1/1 until end of turn.
Okay, this is just not great. I'm going to put it out there right now. It's very hard to build around because it's a 7 mana card, and I will not lie, Ward 3, this is efficient. I like this a lot because it turns the Swords to Plowshares into a 4 mana removal spell.
But that's
spell.
Still totally reasonable. I wish it was Ward 7. Wouldn't it be better if it was Ward 7?
True, but typically the thing that hurts was someone paths something, plays 2 more cards that turn, right? So at the very least, that will slow people down. But this costs 7 mana, so you really only have, if you're playing this in the 99, you got room for maybe 2-3 of these before you start overloading that slot. But you're going to want to, I guess, we won't spend too much time on this one. I think it's a really tough card to build around, but there are some interesting things you can do with the extra pump, and specifically it's a temporary power buff. Has to be when it enters the battlefield or attacks.
So basically, think about all the creatures that it would be great to make into 7/7s. So there are some creatures out there that lend their power to others, you know? So basically, they kind of share that power. So a card like
Wild Beastmaster.
Yeah.
When it attacks, each other creature you control gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is Wild Beastmaster's power. So you're swinging with Storvald and Wild Beastmaster. The trigger goes on the stack. You turn it into a 7/7, and then the Wild Beastmaster trigger goes off, and every creature gets +X/+X.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Next up, we got Tanazir Quandrix.
Yes, this one's a little tougher. It's 3 green blue for a 4/4 flying trample. When it enters the battlefield, double the number of +1/+1 counters on charged creature you control. And whenever this creature attacks, you may have the base power and toughness of other creatures you control become equal to Tanazir's Quandrix. Tanazir Quandrix has power and toughness. So you can make this into a 7/7, and then everything becomes a 7/7. Sir Farron is very similar to Wild Beastmaster, where it just gives that buff.
But it just gives it to one other creature.
Yeah, one other creature, not all of them.
Of course, there's a lot of different things where having really big power is good. So a card like Greater Good.
Oh, yeah.
You turn your disposable little elf into a 7/7. You attack with it. It gets in some damage. And then you sacrifice it to Greater Good to draw 7, discard 3.
Yeah, that's pretty broken. Marwyn the Nurturer also adds taps to add amount of green equal to its power.
Similarly, a Devoted Druid. You can turn it into a 7/7, and then you tap it for mana, and then you can put a -1/-1 counter on it to untap. So now it's got a one-time use of like creating a bunch of mana.
Yeah, you'd probably do this on the turn you play Storvald, so you're not stuck to playing instant speed during combat when the trigger would go off again.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, you can also blink Storvald as well, so there's a lot of things to do there. And then cards like Silvala, Heart of the Wilds, you can also add mana in any combination of colors, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. So it's a great way to play these cards out, play Storvald, then tap this creature to re-add that mana and just sort of keep the engine going. Because having a 7 mana commander, you don't want that to be the only thing you do when you play it that turn.
For sure. You know, another thing that likes having their base power and toughness boosted is the same with the Belt of Giant Strength, and that's like Hydra's 0/0s with that many +1/+1 counters on it. So if we have something like, I included Lifeblood Hydra, because Lifeblood Hydra also has a trigger based on its power when it dies.
Right. You gain life equal and draw cards equal to its power, and it comes in with X +1/+1 counters. Let's say this is a 3/3. Boom, it becomes a 10/10. You sack it to a greater good. You draw 20 cards. Discard 3. Pretty good.
That's pretty awesome. Man, you make me excited about that, Jimmy.
Yeah, right. Don't get too excited. It's a 7-drop commander. You're in green, though, so you can probably get there a little more efficiently. There's also Hero's Bane, which for 2 green-green, you can double. You put X +1/+1 counters on it, where X is its power. So if it comes in with 4 +1/+1 counters, you make it into an 11/11. For 4 mana, it turns into another 11 counter. So it returns eventually to a 15/15. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, for sure.
And then there's just stuff like Scourge of Skull of Veil, and this, again, it's a Hydra deck. Maybe Storvald could be an interesting Hydra commander.
Maybe it could.
See that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can tack to sack another creature, and you put +1/+1 counters on Scourge equal to the sacrifice creature's toughness. So you can turn that crappy 1/1 that's now a 7/7 for one tap and sack, and blam.
And then you put it on this thing so it gets even bigger, and then you can turn it into a 7/7 with that many +1/+1 counters. So it gets pretty big.
Yep. I really like this next addition here. So things that are that can definitely be abused, that have a low power because that's how they try to balance it.
So we got a card like Cold-Eyed Selkie. You draw cards equal to the damage it dealt. And so if it's a 7-7, you're going to draw seven cards.
Yeah, it has Island Walk too. So this is probably getting
that's
in.
Probably getting in, right?
Cephalid Constable. This card is just mean. These are cards that, by the way, are all played in Rafik, which is also a banned commander, and that wants to get in a lot of damage and cheat creatures in there. So Cephalid Constable, when it deals combat damage, you return up to that many permanents that player controls to their hand. So it's a 1-1. I think seven's pretty good there.
A card like Dream Stealer, it's got menace, so it's probably going to get in, but when it deals combat damage to a player, that player discards that many cards.
Yeah, that's...
just like discards seven, discard
pretty mean, yeah. And then there's a new card called Wand of Orcus. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, create that many 2/2 black zombie creature tokens, untapped. Ooh, so that could get for a lot.
I choose seven of them.
Yeah, I choose seven as well.
All right.
And then, of course, I don't know, I guess Craig was around when he talked about this because there's a whole infect category.
There is. So Blighted Agent, you know, look, it's got infect, it's got unblockable, you can turn it into a 7-7, two hits, people are dead.
Yeah, and a lot of times with the infect decks too, you have to artificially buff the power and toughness with pump spells, and that's a lot of cards to use for that. So having Storvald be your main big guy, it's going to be tough because typically infect wants to end the game early, and
yeah,
Storvald takes
right.
a while to cast, but this is a way to get the final points of damage in and out of nowhere too with like a Inkmoth Nexus or a Plague Mirror, and just any cards that have infect that are cheap.
Yeah, well maybe, I mean, you could just include an Inkmoth Nexus in this deck and be like, well, maybe I'll kill someone with infect, but that's not your main gameplay.
Right.
There's also some creative ways to use Storvald. A card like Willbreaker. Whenever a creature an opponent controls becomes a target of a spell or ability, you gain control of that creature for as long as you control Willbender. I'm actually going to turn your Elesh Norn into a 7-7.
Why?
And your...
Take it. No!
And your Jinkataxis into a 1-1. I will take both of them, thank you.
Funnily enough, Willbreaker is a 2-3, so it survives Elesh Norn. Yeah, because Storvald can target any creature when this happens, which is kind of cool. You can also, like, instant speed flicker change some combat up. Nah, that's a little too much. Okay. Dismissing the Dream is a 6 in the blue enchantment that gives everyone the illusion text that when this becomes the target of a spell or ability, sack it. So that's a cool way for you to kill some stuff there too. It's also seven mana.
Very clunky. Well, I mean, 1/7 drop deserves another, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's how it goes. And then Prodigal Sorcerer, I like this a lot because this is taking the other side, turn it into a 1/1, ping it for one, kill it.
Ah, your Elesh Norn is a 1/1. You're like, fine, at least that one doesn't work. Prodigal
Actually,
Sorcerer
no, yeah,
is
sorry.
Dead.
Yeah, your Jingataxis. And Elesh Norn also, I think, is just,
Your Jingataxis is a 1/1. I'm going to Prodigal Sorcerer it to death.
Bing! Yeah, it's pretty funny.
It's not the highest power level of deck, but I think that there was a lot more interesting things in it than I thought there would be.
Yeah, I think so too. Even after doing that low review there's a lot of stuff you could do with it. I think this is definitely a fun one to build around and maybe include in some other decks, but I like the fact that it makes things really, really big. 7-7, that's a lot. And Ward 3, again, keep in mind, it is hard to target things with Ward 3 on it. It's going to waste a lot of your opponent's mana. They'll have to second guess what they're doing. Okay, next up is Kati Bree of Mithril Hall. If any card ever wanted to have an alter to be the character from Brave.
Merida.
Yep, this is it, for sure. Red hair, Bowman, perfect fit. Green and a white for a 2/2 legendary creature human archer with first strike and reach. Whenever Kati Bree of Mithril Hall attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it for each equipment attached to it. And you can pay one mana to remove all +1/+1 counters from Kati Bree. It deals X damage to target, attacking, or blocking creature and opponent controls, where X is the number of counters removed this way. Okay.
Obviously, you want a deck with a lot of equipment because equipment are going to buff your commander.
Yep.
And
it's also got first strike and reach. So first strike with equipment, pretty hard to block.
Very hard to block.
Yeah.
And that activated ability too. It's just like, oh, you block me, well, ping you. You know.
Yeah.
So you can lean into those counters. You know, you can get more of them. Like Sword of Hours is a new one. Basically, it has you adding +1/+1 counters when it attacks, and you're going to be doing that. Mm-hmm. And then you get to roll dice.
Yeah.
And if you roll well enough, you'll double up those +1/+1 counters. Then you'll have so many you won't want to activate Metabreeze ability.
Yeah, Sword of Hours, pretty fun stuff there. There's also Sword of Truth and Justice. Whenever it deals combat damage, you put +1/+1 counter on a creature you control, and then you proliferate.
Yeah, that's just way more reliable. So I'm going to stick with Sword of Truth and Justice.
Yeah,
right there,
me too. Hardened Scales is the go-to +1/+1 counter card. It adds that many +1/+1 counters every single time a effect would add +1/+1 counters. You also have the Ring of Colonia. At the beginning of your upkeep, you put a +1/+1 counter on the equipped creature. If it's green, it only costs one to equip, and it gives it trample.
It is green, and trample's really good with this
very
spec.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially because first strike trample combat just becomes a nightmare when Caddy is swinging in with all those plus one counters.
And then, of course, you mentioned First Strike, and she has an activated ability, so Death Touch is going to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. Basilisk Collar gives Death Touch and Lifelink, so that makes it a really powerful Voltron commander.
Yep, so there's Gorgon's Head, and then Grafted Exoskeleton gives it Infect. We mentioned Infect three times on this episode,
I know, but it's good. Here's the thing, it's a good piece of equipment.
It is.
Goes well in equipment-based decks.
Also sure. Great with First Strike, because it deals damage in the form of -1/-1 counters. First Strike comes in, blam, hits it. Even if it doesn't kill it, it's going to make it from a 7/7 to a 2/2 or whatever, and then you're definitely going to win combat after that.
Yeah, but you know what the people are most excited about with this card?
Mm-hmm.
Is the fact that she's an archer, and so they like the archer decks, and so they're using other archers, and so they're searching creature type archers and getting all the archers in there and all the different bows, mm-hmm. and putting them in there. And so there's a lot of flavor, I think, that's this in this deck.
Yeah, you can play Nylea, God of the Hunt, or God Eternal Oketra. Both of them have giant bow and arrows that they're firing. They're going, however, from right to left, and Caddy is going from left to right.
So, oh no, are they against each other?
I hope not. Or they're hitting someone in the middle, and that middle is you, the opponent.
Those are not archers, but they are definitely should be.
Yeah, and they're very powerful too, and they're
so
flavorful.
You can include that in there.
Decks. Actually, I think I would put this in other +1/+1 Marius decks, because her ability, you can use it at instant speed to target any combat that is not your own. Because
sneaky combat.
DJ could be swinging at Josh over there, and then I'd be like, hold on, Josh, make me a deal. I can add some counters to Caddy Bree, pay one, deal 5 damage to his attacking creature. You can block it with your 1/1 and kill it. Right? There's a lot that you can do there. I think that's kind of interesting. And maybe this is just, because it's only 2 mana, it could just be a really fun utility player in those +1/+1 counter decks that can just sort of get a lot of value in by doing stuff like that.
I like that. All right, so that is the Bant deck completed.
Aura of Courage.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Rakdos. Rakdos is Planner Portal.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
All right, this is Prosper Tombbound. 2, a red and a black for a 1/4 tiefling warlock. It has Death Touch. At the beginning of your end step, exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. Okay. Then it says, whenever you play a card from exile, create a treasure token.
Okay. So right off the bat, this card freaking rocks.
I mean, we talked about the very limited card draw and mana advantage that we got from the, you know, the Bant guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have like actual real card draw with any card and real mana advantage. And all we have to do is just play those cards. Like, it's very good.
Yeah. So I really like Prosper quite a bit. The fact that you get a card every single end step and you have until the end of your next turn. So you get to untap and play those cards later.
I love that. So much more than the other impulse draws, because that means you have access to the card on your turn, on your turn, on your turn. So all those instants are into play. Cause usually, you know, you have something reactive, a kill spell. Mm-hmm. You know, you exile it and you're like, okay, I can play this until end of turn. You're like, well, I guess I dreadbore your elf. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel as good. Whereas this one, it feels like you have a little bit more access to play what you want.
Yeah, and I love that you make treasures as well. And these cards can be from anywhere from exile. They don't necessarily need to be from Prosper's ability. There's a lot of these impulsive draw type effects in red already.
So many. What's your favorite?
Oh, geez. I don't know. Prosper, Tomebound. It used to be choosing cons on Outpost Siege.
Oh, yeah.
But I think Prosper is just really takes the cake as a creature and as one you can play as your commander.
What about Burgi and her horn? What about her horn?
Oh, Burgi's pretty good. I like Burgi a lot. Because
you can have Burgi on both sides, too.
That's right.
Because I think creating the mana orb, I'm able to do that.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the synergies here. When you have a bunch of treasures, well, when you're starting to sacrifice them to make stuff, is there a way you can kill people with it? Indeed, there is. Have you ever considered Marionette Master, one of my favorite finishers?
I love Marionette Master, and it is going to do some work in this deck. You're going to just generate a ton of treasures, mm-hmm. and then you're just going to keep playing your game plan, and then Marionette Master is going to kill people.
Yes, equal to its power, and you probably just want to
stack those servos up on it.
Yeah, you don't even care about those servos, really. Mayhem Devil also pings people every time you sacrifice stuff.
Treasures you sacrifice, yeah.
Yeah. And
Mayhem Devil, I realize that I sacrifice a lot of stuff too, you know?
Right.
Like, I crack clues and my own treasures and my own fetch lands.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, Mayhem Devil triggers on that? Wait, it goes anywhere? No, my dorks. Like, it feels really powerful.
Yeah, there's also Revel in Riches, which is just a win con for having a bunch of treasures, and that's definitely a thing that this deck can just sort of build up slowly.
Yeah, if you don't want to crack your treasures to deal damage, gear per Aether Grid, you just tap them in order to ping whatever you want.
Yeah, and then you have like Nadir's Nightblade, which gives you the similar, it drains like Aristocrats, right? Each opponent loses a life and you gain a life whenever a token you control leaves the battlefield. And the Academy Manufacturer to make three of everything, Goldspan Dragon, Zorn to double up on your treasures as well.
You get more mana. Zorn.
Yeah. Zorn, yeah.
Extra treasures. Like, I want extra treasures when I'm getting, like, a couple a turn. Because, by the way, you could very easily get one treasure a turn from your commander, but, like, you're going to pair it with other exile effects like we're talking about, so you're going to generate, like, two or three or four treasures every turn.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. So, I really like Birgi as well when we're talking about impulsive draw and ways to sort of make use of it. It's whenever you cast a spell, you add red, and then until end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. And on the backside of it, Harnfell Horn of Bounty. This card is, I think, one of the best red cards ever printed. Four in red, legendary artifact, discard a card, exile the top two cards of your library. You may play those cards this turn.
Oh my gosh, because just imagine this, like, if you have Prosper out, you discard a card, you have two that you can play. You play one, you get a treasure. You play another one, you get a treasure. Then you have the mana to be able to do it again. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's crazy that the amount of, like, sort of storminess that you can get from these interactions.
Yeah, a card like Ubamask is really interesting, too, that you put down here. I haven't seen this one in a while. It's if a player would draw a card, they exile that card face up instead. So this affects every player at the table. You get to see everything that everyone draws from here on out. And then each player may play lands and cast spells from among cards they exile with Ubamask this turn.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, it's a weird one. But it's cool because it makes all of your card draws
cool.
into things that trigger Prosper. You're not losing access to the cards necessarily, but you just sort of get them that turn, right? It's not there forever. But at the very least, you know, Prosper, you want to just keep this engine going and just...
And you know what? We've been focusing on impulsive card draw, but actually there's just like a ton of different ways that you can play things from exile. So suspend.
Oh, yeah.
The suspend mechanic, adventure mechanic, madness... Cascade, Rebound, Foretell.
Oh, they're all exiled, and then you cast them from exile. So yeah, that would trigger Prosper every single time.
So you can look up all those keywords and get your favorite ones, but one of each. Suspend, I think that Glimpse of Tomorrow is awesome because you're going to have a bunch of treasures on the battlefield.
And they all turn into things afterwards.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Like really big relevant things. Bone Crusher Giant is a favorite of mine because I like the interaction that we have. That's the adventure one. Necrogoyf is the madness one that I have because honestly, do you care if you're discarding your hand?
No.
When you have this much card draw in exile? No, it's going to be awesome. For Cascade, you know, Bitumous Blast, being able to deal some damage, some removal there. For Rebound, I chose Fevered Suspicion because we all need an 8-drop, right?
Yeah, and hey, look, you're going to make a lot of treasure tokens. I saw the Prosper deck in action. It can get up to those very high mana totals because it's just making so many treasures.
Well, and also, for each opponent exiles the top card of their library until end of turn, you know, you may cast any number of those spells from among them without paying their mana cost. So you are casting those spells from exile. So you could generate a bunch.
Yeah, you can get three more treasures that turn.
Three spells, three more treasures next turn, three spells, three more treasures.
Oof.
Or Foretell, Dream Devourer lets you foretell whatever you want.
Love
so you don't need
card.
To have a Foretell deck to even do that.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, you can probably steal some cards from your opponents as well. Gonti, Lord of Luxury.
Oh, yeah.
Exiles cards off the top of their library and you get to choose one and play it. Same goes for Douthi Voidwalker.
Oh,
that
my
card.
Gosh.
It's not off the top of your library, but they do exile the cards that your opponents are playing.
Get them
so,
from exile.
So very good. So very good.
Oh, my gosh. And look, you know, there's other synergies that play from exile. We talked about the wild magic sorcerers that cascade when you play them from exile. That's in the commander deck. Layla, the Blade Reforged, that grows bigger as you play things from exile or you cast things from exile.
One of my new favorites is you find some prisoners. It's an instant from AFR. It's one in a red. You can choose to either destroy an artifact or exile the top three cards of your opponent's library. You choose one of them and you can cast that card as though it were pay mana as though it were mana of any color. And you can play that card until the end of your next turn.
Oh my gosh. Like,
it's a tutor hoser.
I mean, we've mentioned so many cards. I think that there's a bunch of different ways to build this deck just because it's so deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We mentioned all these different mechanics that work, but I think it's just going to be powerful, you know, because your commander draws cards and creates mana. Of course, it's going to be great.
Very much so. Okay, the next card in the Planar Portal Rakdos deck is Kara Zakar, the Eye Tyrant. 3, a black and a red, 5/5 Beholder. Whenever you attack a player, tap target creature that player controls and goad it. So until your next turn, that creature must attack each combat if able and attacks a player other than you if able. And then whenever an opponent attacks another one of your opponents, you and the attacking player each draw a card and lose a life. Interesting. So it's encouraging, right? You attack someone, you goad their creature, and then when that creature has to attack someone else, then you and the attacking creature draw a card and lose a life.
I think the drawing the card and losing the life is the real push for this commander because like Carter Doomscourge, you know, goads everything when it comes onto the battlefield, you know,
Morisi,
Breaker of the Coil, you know, that'll just goad the entire team over and over again. But this one has card draw.
Yeah, and it also makes your opponents feel a little bit less bad when they have to swing with that creature, and it might die if you goad their, like, Oracle of Moldiah. It's a 2-2 swinging out, and they're like, no! What's also nice is that you'll probably get damage in. Kara Zakar is a 5-5, and you're tapping a creature down. 5 power, I found, is pretty hard to block on most commander tables, unless, you know, they're really heavily creature-based. You're always going to sort of find someone to get in with a 5-5, especially when you're tapping one other of their creatures
down,
too.
Yeah, the tap is definitely relevant, I think. And remember, this is a political attacking deck, you know, so I think that it's gonna have a high fun level, you know, and work best around like lower metas, because if no one has any creatures on the battlefield because they're all like behind their spells in their hands, you know, then the power level of this goes down. But as soon as people start committing stuff to the board, then this thing can actually do a lot of damage because you're using your opponent's decks against each other.
Yeah, if you like Xyris as well, or Carter, or any of those decks, or Morisi, then Carter is sort of the Rakdos version of that.
Yeah, for sure. So what do we do? Well, we can also pump up their attacks. We're already giving them a card.
Ooh, this is cool. I like this. I didn't think about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're already giving them a card to be able to attack other people. So let's make it easier for them to attack other people or give them some bonuses. Frontier Warmonger is a 4-mana 4/4. Whenever one or more creatures attack one of your opponents or planeswalkers they control, those creatures gain menace until end of turn.
Ooh, okay.
So make those attacks a little bit easier. We also have like Frenzied Saddlebrute. It gives haste as long as those creatures are attacking other people. You can even give, you know, your creatures actual creatures to attack with, like Ride of the Raging Storm. Here, have a 5-1 trample. You can't attack me with it, though.
Yeah, the cool thing is that Karazhagar does let everyone draw cards when this starts happening, so everyone is going to be incentivized to attack each other, and that's one of the things about the Carter deck I found when I played it a bunch against it, is that it really does have an effect when no one can attack you or they're not incentivized to, and that can really, like, it speeds games up a ton. You'd be surprised how many attacks don't go through because someone's just like, I don't want to risk it, or you know what, that damage is minimal. But if they're like, I can draw a card and maybe do some damage, okay, fine, I'll totally do that. Or if it's goaded, they have to. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that Carter's just going to be a really fun
Karazhagar. They all start with K.
They do.
Oh yeah, you can also play cards like Wound Reflection to drain people that extra life as well.
I like that too. I have Crown of Doom. I like the idea of taxing their mana, especially when I'm giving them extra cards to draw, but also buffing their power. Crown of Doom, you get to pay mana to pass it around, and it pumps creatures +2/+0.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that a bit. All right, moving onwards. Is Lorcan, Warlock Collector.
Lorcan, Warlock Collector is 5BB, another 7-drop, Jimmy.
Oh no.
5BB for a 6/6 legendary creature devil. It's got flying, and whenever a creature card is put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, you may pay life equal to its mana value. If you do, put it onto the battlefield under your control. It's a Warlock in addition to its other types. If a Warlock you control would die, exile it instead.
Okay, so this is mono black. It's very expensive to cast, but it is pretty powerful. A creature card from anywhere into an opponent's graveyard, you can pay life into it to its mana value, and then you get that creature.
I mean, you only need a couple creatures for this to be really good. Like three creatures, I'd say. Then suddenly, this is actually getting amazing.
Yeah, the life total you're going to be spending is going to add up. So I think you probably want to slot this into a white-black life gain deck. It's going to be hard to, I think, build around this entirely. Or Kirik, for instance, loves to pay life. Mm-hmm. So I could see Lorcan doing some work in that kind of deck as well. But in general, right, you want to just kill things if this is out on the battlefield. So cards like Font of Agonies is a great choice here. Whenever you pay life, you put that many blood counters on this enchantment, and then you can pay one in the black to remove 4 blood counters and destroy target creature.
Oh my gosh, like you're going to be paying life all over the place with Lorcan.
Yeah, you know. Get the mana, you remove the counters, kill a creature, get the new creature, put more counters on. It just sort of fuels itself there. That's pretty cool. The Eldest Reborn is something that makes everyone sacrifice a creature or planeswalker, and then they discard cards, and then you get to put a target creature or planeswalker from the graveyard on the battlefield under your control. So all three of those are doing what Lorcan wants.
Yeah. And honestly, there's a ton of different ways to be able to get things in the graveyard. Black is great at killing things, so, you know, we don't need to share everything with you. But, you know, it's not just killing stuff. I have one sneaky way to get something into the graveyard.
How's that?
Withering Boon.
What? What is this card? Is this a pet card?
It's a pet card. It's a good card, not a pet card.
It is good, but
Withering Boon is 1BB for an instant and is an additional cost to cast the spell, pay 3 life. Counter target creature spell.
Black counterspell for creatures.
Black counterspell, counter that. Get into the graveyard. I'm going to steal it back with Lorcan.
Okay. This card, by the way, I think in mono black decks, you could just play it. You could just play it. It's
pretty good.
Because
it's so sneaky. I like it.
Yep.
You can get things with discard.
So cards like Rankle, Master of Pranks makes everyone discard cards.
Also sacrifice a creature, so it's got two of those modes that you like.
Yep, and then Turgrid, God of Fright. This card is very scary. Whenever an opponent sacks a non-token permanent or discards a permanent card, you may put that card from the graveyard onto the battlefield under your control.
Yeah, so just kind of, by the way, it does put it in perspective that Turgrid is just so much better than this. You just get it back. But you can see also how a lot of the effects that we've talked about are sacrifice effects, so there is some overlap there. But then also on the other side, it can on the lantern, you know, you can force your opponents to discard cards or sacrifice creatures.
Yep. Ill-Gotten Gains, 2BB sorcery, exile it. Each player discards their hand then returns up to 3 cards from their graveyard to their hand. So you're going to see a lot of triggers there for Lorcan.
Yeah. Also, it's just a weird card that I think more people should play.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not that fun. People don't like discarding cards. And then finally, you know, you can mill them and do damage. Sir Conrad the Grim, Altar of the Brood, Altar of Dementia, Dread Summons.
Good
just
stuff.
All ways to mill people out there. And then this is a replacement effect, right?
Yes, it is.
This is a replacement effect. Is whenever a creature card is put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, you may pay life equal to its mana value. So you can actually replace that replacement effect. And you put an interesting card here that I think is pretty powerful. Yeah. It's Nightmare Shepherd.
Yeah, Nightmare Shepherd. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, you may exile it. If you do, create a token that's a copy of that creature, except it's a 1/1 in a nightmare in addition to its other types.
Okay.
So you get that creature back. Normally, if it's a warlock, it would die. It would be exiled, but instead you're like, oh, no, no. I will replace that with this Nightmare Shepherd, so I kind of keep the creature that I stole from you.
Yeah, I really like Turgrid as the commander for this deck, and you're playing Nightmare Shepherd and Lorcan really like, Warlock Collector.
You know, when you talked about Turgrid, I really enjoyed that. Let's go with that.
Finally, you got tons of different ways to animate things from the graveyard. Reanimate does that already for you. Animate Dead, Necromancy. There's just a bunch of different ways.
We talked about like good decks have redundancy, and so that's a really good source of redundancy there.
Yep. Okay. All right, so that does it for the Rakdos deck. Prosper, love that card.
Prosper.
Very, very prosperous. Thank goodness we have cards like that now for Rakdos. Okay, let's move on to the final deck. This is Draconic Rage, also known as the Gruul deck. First card up to bat is Vrondis, Rage of Ancients. He probably sounds cooler than that, though. 3 red and a green for a 5/4 legendary creature dragon barbarian with Enrage. Glad to see this mechanic is back. Whenever Vrondis is dealt damage, you may create a 5/4 red and green dragon spirit creature token with, when this creature deals damage, sacrifice it. Whenever you roll one or more dice, you may have Vrondis deal 1 damage to itself. So that is an Enrage trigger, because it's going to deal 1 damage, and then blame, you get a 5/4 dragon spirit that when it deals damage, you sack it.
Yeah. So 5/4s are temporary, but 5/4s are big.
Very big.
5/4s are dragons, but they don't fly. Hmm. Important thing to note.
Yeah, they're dragon spirits, a little tethered to this mortal coil, I suppose.
Spirits fly too, though. I feel like if anything should fly, it is a dragon that is also a spirit. But anyway,
maybe they should jump on Spirit Airlines to get that flying in there. Okay, so there are lots of ways to trigger Enrage. All of the dinosaurs were where this originally came from. Pinging effects that deal 1 damage to all your creatures. But I think, you know, it wants you to roll dice in this deck. It's a D&D set after all. So there are a lot of different ways to do that, as well as ways to really take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think you want to decide whether you're going to trigger Enrage the traditional way, like the dinosaur way, or whether you're going to do rolling. Because if you're triggering with rolling, then you're basically only enraging your commander, and like, you don't want extra dinosaurs.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, you have some extra dinosaurs in there, and you're like, I'm going to roll a die. Oh, wait, it doesn't.
It only deals Vrondis to itself, yeah. So you're not building an Enrage deck.
You're building a Vrondis deck. Right. Exactly. But if you move away from rolling a little bit and move towards traditional Enrage enablers, then this can supplement a bunch of other powerful Enragey dinosaurs.
Yeah, so this might be a great thing to put in the deck of a dinosaur deck, or if you're playing it by itself, then maybe you want to consider Barbarian class, which is a new one of the enchantment classes from AFR. It's a red mana. It just says whenever you're going to roll dice, you roll that main dice +1 and ignore the lowest roll. So you get to have more choices over the kinds of cards you're going to be rolling. And also, Barbarian class does give haste after a while as well.
Yeah.
And it gives menace and stuff to the creatures, which is pretty good.
Yeah, Chaos Dragon. This is the kind of deck that, by the way, you want to do damage. It's a Gruul deck. You got 5 powered attackers. And so Chaos Dragon comes down early. It's a 4/4 for 3 with haste. Crazy. But you don't have complete control over who you attack because you got to roll dice. But hey, you're rolling dice every single turn. So you're pressuring life total with it, and you're rolling dice every turn, dealing damage to this every turn, making a 5/4 every turn.
Yep, there's also a brand new card called Delina, which is really exciting. This card is a 3/2 for 4 mana, 3 in red. When it attacks, you choose a creature you control and roll a d20, and then with 1 to 14, you get to make a copy of that creature, except it's not legendary, and it has exile this creature at the end of combat. So you can make 2 of your commander, even. You can make 2 Delinas,
okay,
even if you want.
Okay, so we have 2 of these now. Okay, what about a big roll?
Big roll, 15 to 20, you create one of those tokens, they don't get exiled, and you get to roll again.
I love that, because you can create another copy of your commander, and then you can roll again, and then you'll get 2 triggers, then you get even more of those 5/4 spirits.
Barbarian class, Vrondis, Delina, you're going to the races. You're going to kill people.
For sure. Of course, if you're interested in die rolling, you know, we just have a whole set with die rolling. You don't have to look very far. Just look in this set. It's all there. Exactly.
Yep, yep. You're going to want to find ones that you can use every single turn as well.
Yeah, for sure. And then we, of course, have traditional Enrage enablers, Pingers.
Goblin Sharpshooter, Pyrohemia, Outpost Siege. Now, Outpost Siege, you're probably going to be doing the exile part of it, but still.
Wait, what are you talking about, Outpost Siege? You could totally do the other mode. You're gonna have tons of non-token creatures dying.
Fine. Siege is great because it says dragons and Vrondis is a dragon. And that's the problem.
No! Okay, so think about this. You got a bunch of 5/4s and they're gonna die. And you might even have sacrifice outlets or things like that.
Okay.
You know, so you attack and it dies, then it immediately replaces itself because you can take that ping and put it on your commander.
You sold me. This is the first time for me that I've seen Outpost Siege want to come in on dragons. And it makes sense. It's very thematic with this deck because of Vrondis.
He went back to the thematic part. I think it could be good.
No, it is good. It is good. Straight up. Because it's not even non-token creatures. Any creatures you die.
Yeah, and just leave the battlefield.
So every time your 5/4 swings and deals damage, it dies. But guess what? Vrondis just pumps out another one immediately.
Yeah. Lady and I, who did the upgrade guide for this, talked about Court of Ire. Mm-hmm. It's a 3 red for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you become the monarch. Card draw, thumbs up.
Bingo.
If you're not the monarch, then you get to deal 2 damage wherever you want. You can send it at your commander, create a dragon every single turn. If you are the monarch, then that's great. You get to keep the monarch, thumbs up. Mm-hmm. But also you get to deal 7 damage. And in a deck cares about damage, you know, that's going to be really great.
Yep, we already talked about the dino payoffs. There's a bunch of them. Ranging raptors. We're not going to talk about them here because there's just too much text. Ripjaw raptor, polyraptor, silverclad ferocidons. Just look up dinos that have enrage on them. You're going to find some fun ones for this
deck. These are the best ones. Draw a card, get a land, make a copy, sacrifice a permanent.
Yeah, very, very powerful. And then there's non-dino payoffs. Cards like Brash Taunter is one that I really like. And when it deals damage, you can sort of direct it to an opponent instead. So that's a great way for, you know, if you have the pingers and all that stuff to get that in.
Exactly. How about this tech? Druid's Call. 1 and a green. Whenever enchanted creature is dealt damage, its controller puts that many 1/1 green squirrel creature tokens into play.
Ooh, Vrondis and his and his squirrels.
He creates 5/4 dragons. He's like, and a squirrel. You have your sharpshooter pinging your own Vrondis, and then he's creating these dragons and a squirrel.
Where are they even coming out of? Is it like gremlins where if you get them wet they just start like creating more and more? Like, where does Vrondis create these spirits from?
Oh my gosh. Fiend Lash is a really fun equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has reach. Whenever equipped creature is dealt damage, it deals damage equal to its power to target player or planeswalker. So this becomes 7 power. You ping it and now you create a 5/4 and you deal 7 damage to something.
Wow, that's cool. I like that a lot. And of course, there is Fight Matters cards. Nyeth of the Dire Hunt is a Gruul commander. It allows you to, whenever one or more of a creatures you control fight or become blocked, you draw cards. So your 5/4s are maybe going to even draw you cards. And you can also double a creature's target power and toughness, and they have to be blocked this combat if able. There's lots of cards like Hunt the Weak and all that sort of stuff in green that allow your creatures to fight other ones. And that's another way to trigger enrage.
Very cool. Of course, now we got all these. We do have these disposable 5/4s entering the battlefield. Mm-hmm. You know, so we want to make sure that we're getting good use out of them because they're one use dragons. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And so one of the ways is Dragon Horde. It's a 3-mana artifact. Whenever a dragon enters the battlefield under your control, put a gold counter on Dragon Horde. You can tap it to remove a gold counter from Dragon Horde to draw a card. So that means that every single dragon that this your commander creates is card draw.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Card draw, yeah.
And then you can add 1 mana of any color. So this is card draw and ramp.
Ramp. Very good. It's also 3-mana ramp specifically, which is perfect for a 5-mana commander.
Nice.
There's Garrick's Uprising. Anytime a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you draw a card. Woo. Creatures you control have trample.
Because these don't have trample, so that would make them a little bit more powerful.
Yeah, very good. And this also draws you a card immediately if you have Vrondis or one of your creatures out.
All right. So this is, I mean, that seems great.
Yeah. Same with Elemental Bond. This is just a 3-mana enchantment. Whenever a creature with power 3 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you draw a card. So there's lots of ways for this deck to keep refilling its hand because you're going to be on the aggressive and you need that card advantage to really make sure you can push through to the end game.
Yeah. You know, pushing through could be one of the areas where this can be tough because, you know, your creatures have to sacrifice as soon as they swing in. You know,
right.
They swing in, they chomp, and then they both die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you want to get around it. Cards like Terror of the Peaks could be really good.
I love this
3 red for a 5/4. It's got flying and all that other good stuff. But whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Terror of the Peaks deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target.
Any target. 5 damage for each creature that comes in from Vrondis.
Yeah. One thing that's actually really good about this is that the Terror of the Peaks deals the damage because if the token that entered the battlefield deals the damage, then it would die. You know? So there are some cards out there that say like, hey, like any creature that enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage or it deals 2 damage.
Mm-hmm.
No, because then your dragons will just deal a little bit of damage and immediately die. Yep. Tear the Peak said, no, I deal that damage. Same thing with Scourge of Valkus. Scourge of Valkus, the one dealing that dragon damage equal to the number of dragons you have on the battlefield.
Oh, and you're going to have a lot with all those five
Could
ports out.
Could be a lot.
Same with Purphoros. Every time you're making a token, you're killing people. So yeah, Vorondas, I think, has a lot of fun ways to build it. I look forward to seeing some Vorondas decks out in the wild. Maybe even I'm interested in building one. But I think I'm going to make Sephiroth first, though. I think I'm still on that train.
Nice.
All right, next up we have Klauth, Unrivaled Ancient. Well, we'll see about Unrivaled, buddy. Five a red and a green for a 4/4 legendary creature dragon with flying and haste. Whenever Klauth attacks, add X mana in any combination of colors where X is the total power of attacking creatures. Spend this mana only to cast spells. Until end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end.
Woo, that's a lot of mana you can make.
It's a lot of mana.
It's a ton of mana.
By itself, it's a 4/4. It is a 7 drop, but it's a 4/4. And if you just attack with this, you get 4 mana. So technically, this is like a 3 mana card the turn you play it.
Yeah, I don't want to just get that much mana. I want to get like a ton of mana off of this. So first off, it stinks that we can't use the mana however we want, because there's a lot of activated abilities that I would like to use this mana on.
Probably that's why they're like, can't bust it too hard, right?
I know, right? But I think that we basically want to include other creatures that have this similar effect. So like Old Gnawbone, for example, is, you know, it creates treasures when it deals that damage. I mean, we keep going. We got Grand Warlord Rada creates some
mana in a similar way. Yep.
Neheb the Eternal.
Oh, you know, makes adding a some, ton of mana.
Makes a ton of Savage Ventmaw.
Yep, similar to Rada. Yep.
Yeah, Goreclaw makes a Terror of Chalcisma, makes it easier to cast these big creatures.
Yep.
Gives mana reduction, gives trample. Sword of Feast and Famine untaps your stuff.
Lets you use the mana in a bigger way. Leyline Tyrant just allows you to keep going back to that old combat.
Yeah, for sure. It lets you save that red mana up and stuff like that. So we have all of this ways to sort of generate this extra mana. How are we going to use that mana?
Well, like I said, going back to extra combat, I really meant Aggravated Assault, which is a repeatable way to keep going into, look.
So just make even more mana by keep having more combat phases.
Here's the thing, you're like, oh, but you can't use it to you know, Aggravated Assault. You have to use it to cast spells, so you're not always going to be working like really perfectly with a lot of cards, because Aggravated Assault is an enchantment, and you can cast it, and the whole point of this enchantment is that you can pay 5 mana on the activated ability part to keep going back to combat. But if you're running like a Savage Ventmaw or whatever it is, Klauth and Savage Ventmaw and Grand Lord Braha, all these cards pair up really well. So at least you get to be able to get that extra mana, cast a spell, and then hopefully you have something else out there to enable that extra use of mana.
Same thing with Hellkite Charger. You can't use your commander to activate those extra combats, but do you know what? You should have plenty of mana and other ways to be able to do it. That level of redundancy is just good in your deck anyways.
Yeah, so I think that's how this deck wins. It's just, it gets a couple of creatures out that does similar things to Klauth, and you use that extra mana to play those big crazy things and use that mana and extra combats or whatever to just keep that loop going.
Well, of course, you could use the mana for things besides extra combats. I mean, I could just like kill people with the amount of mana that I'm talking about.
I hope you would.
Crackle with Power.
Ooh.
XXX red for sorcery. Crackle with Power deals 5 times X damage to each of up to X targets.
So you basically want to pump like 15 mana into this, and then each of those is going to do 5, right? Like, or 14, gosh, whatever it is. You can just kill a bunch of things, just murder people.
Just kill people. Kill you. Oops, I don't have quite enough for you, so I'll kill 2 more of your creatures.
Yeah, I also think you can double target someone with this, right? You can target someone twice when it says X targets. I'm pretty sure you can.
Hmm.
If not, I'm totally wrong and you should never listen to me again. But I'm pretty sure you can. So nice. Yes, big X spells, Pest Infestation, another awesome, awesome card that we really like from Strixhaven.
Destroy all the artifacts and enchantments. By the way, you don't need to have an artifact or an enchantment to be able to get the pest.
Yeah.
You can destroy up to that many. So you're just like, okay, I'm going to wipe all the artifacts and enchantments, create a bajillion pests.
Yep.
And then suddenly you have a different way of attacking and get even more mana next turn.
And you have Walking Ballista, those types of X spells you want to pump mana into. Those can sometimes also just be ways to end the game because you have a ton of mana, you make it a big creature, and then you just remove all the counters to kill things. Pretty nice there.
I mean, you could just cast more things. Like, you think about the biggest creatures, like you just cast an Eldrazi.
You could, you're right. Yeah, you're going to save a bunch of mana, especially if you're playing like a Xenagos in this deck. It's going to double the power.
Oh, Xenagos is great in this deck.
Yeah, or you make a Xenagos deck and you put Klauth and similar cards in it, because this is just one of those ways to have those massively explosive turns that's going to be really hard for people to come back from.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, pick your Eldrazi, do whatever you want. You're going to have a lot of mana with Klouth. If you're playing Klouth as your commander, it's a 7-drop, so you're going to have to build a lot of ramp into this deck as well.
Green just has ways to win with a ton of mana.
Yes, correct.
You know what I mean? And they have some combo-y stuff too. Like, you can pick your combo, but like, you can play a Genesis Wave and be for enough and be like, oh, I'm just going to get my combo. Mm-hmm. It's the battlefield.
Tooth and Nail as well. You can have that 9 mana to entwine it. Shared Summons to get 2 creatures out of your deck. There's lots of different ways to get those sort of 2-card, like, let's win the game combos out.
Yeah.
And then cast it with Klouth.
Yeah, absolutely. So overall, big mana deck, but a big expensive commander. So it could be hard to get the balls rolling, you know, get everything going. But yeah, as soon as you get swinging with stuff, I think you're going to do big, big plays, which is fun for commander.
Yeah, I think that is actually a lot of fun, especially because Klouth does have haste. So at the very least, when you play the 7-drop, maybe by turn 4 or 5, right, you can swing that same turn, get some of that mana back, and it's not going to feel as bad.
Deploy something else too.
Now, if someone kills your Klouth, then you're not feeling good, because then that costs 9 mana to cast.
And, all right, the last cruel card we have is Wulfgar of Icewind Dale.
Wulfgar!
It's a 3 red-green for a 4/4 legendary human barbarian. It's got melee, and if a creature you control attacking would cause a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time.
Ooh.
The wording on that is awkward, but it is attack Harmonicon.
Okay.
And by the way, like, it includes itself. So if you attack a bunch of creatures with the melee ability, this thing can get really, really big.
Right. It does have melee, so it's going to double up on that as well. This is kind of cool, attack Harmonicon. Did you do a deck tech on this as well?
Oh my gosh, I did, Jimmy.
No way. Where could we find that?
You can find that over on the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel.
Yeah, this is great.
There's a lot of good stuff. I mean, you just literally look up attack triggers and you're like, oh, that's an attack trigger. Oh, that's an attack trigger. Oh, that's an attack trigger.
Well, especially because in red for a while, that was the only way they're giving value to the cards, was you had to go to combat, and we know we bemoaned it for a bit, but Wulfgar seems like a great way to capitalize on that. You know, we sort of underscored how powerful a Harmonic Prodigy was in our Modern Horizons set review. Sorry, everyone. So Wulfgar does a very similar thing. Anytime you can double up on something, typically it's going to be strong. That's all we have to say about it. So if you've got great attack triggers, let's talk about some of them.
Yeah. So I think that getting extra mana could be good. So Druid's Repository, 1 green-green for an enchantment. Whenever a creature you control attacks, put a charge counter on it. You can trade in charge counters for mana.
Yeah, you can make a lot of things by doing that, by the way.
You know,
a lot
of mana. We also talked about a lot of other things, like Klouth, the dragon. We have Savage Ventmaw, like all of those Grand Warlord Rada. They all have attack triggers that generate all of that mana. So that's pretty cool. So
what about nuts cards, like the most powerful green creature ever printed? Not really, but kind of. Elder Gargaroth. Just does everything. You get 2 of those triggers now.
On attack, draw 2. On attack, create 2 beasts.
There's so many different things. I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
A Tali Primal Storm.
Oh my god, it already has a big attack trigger, getting 4 of all those cards, and then you do it twice.
Doubling that up seems kind of like a game winner.
More extra cards. Layla the Blade Reforged is an attack trigger of exiling the top card of your library, growing it bigger so you get access to more cards. Mm-hmm. It gets bigger faster.
By the way, good old Annihilator. That's an attack trigger, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, you're right. Annihilator is an attack trigger.
Gross.
One of the cheaper ones is Bane of Balaged. It's only 7 mana compared to 11 or whatever. It's a 7/5, and whenever Bane of Balaged attacks, defending player exiles 2 permanents he or she controls.
Yep.
So
this definitely seems like the kind of deck.
4. I mean, look at this. This is 7 mana attack, and it's like Annihilate a 4. It's like one of the top tier Eldrazi.
Yeah. And it's not sacrifice, it's exile. So Bane of Balaged seems pretty fun here. There's a lot of equipment that have attack triggers. Sword of the Animist, you're going to fetch 2 lands. Mage Slayer, you're going to basically deal its power to a creature twice. That's just going to kill people. Blade of Selves make a ton of things.
Oh my gosh, just like myriad twice. Just things go everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then let's say you want to really double things up and go crazy. Then you have Delina Wild Mage, which is an attack trigger. You can make a copy of a Wulfgar or something, and then boom, you get 2x Wulfgar attack triggers. Well, actually, I think Delina has to swing. Delina might not work as well. You might use it on another creature, not Wulfgar. Helm of the Host as well. Very, very powerful. To
make
just
extra
make
copies.
Extra. That's how you make extra Wulfgars. There we go.
Yeah. Or Lithiform Engine, you copy up the trigger.
You know,
there's a trigger. But it's good to have other things. So, you have an Atali on the battlefield. You know what I mean? And you're like, okay, my Atali is good, but my Wulfgar is now like 8 mana to cast. Oh, I have a Lithiform Engine to copy up that trigger.
7 or 9. If Wolfgar cast 8, then
sorry.
You have some sort of mana reduction.
I got some mana reduction.
You better. Scourge of the Throne is one of my favorite attack triggers. It gives you the ability to have another attack, and doubling that up seems pretty darn good.
Yeah, I feel like when we're talking about attack triggers, we just talked about a big old 7-drop dragon, and we talked about a 5-drop that doubles it up. I want to double up these attack triggers and keep attacking over and over again. Extra combats seem amazing.
You're going to have to ramp quite a bit in this deck. And I think, as with all of the red-green decks, adding a way to give haste to everything is just a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So your anger is your whatever's.
You want haste and protection because by its nature, you have creatures on the battlefield turning sideways. And so your opponents have easy interaction with that. A Wrath of God, and suddenly you're like, oh, my Wolfgar costs 7 and I don't have any creatures that work with it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and suddenly your deck feels really clunky. So the mana ramp, the protection is what you really need to make this deck actually function.
Yep, put a bunch in because you have green. You're very lucky. Okay, that does it for our commander review. DJ, what was your favorite commander from this year's commander product? Well, I guess this year's second commander product.
So Wolfgar definitely had me feeling good, but I think I'm going to go with Min. Ooh. Because I know about creatures that attack. That's a known quantity. But Min having all these sneaky ways to like draw cards, love drawing cards, and then also creating these illusions and going wide and then still being a little bit of a tribal deck. So it's like, draw cards, tribal, go wide tokens. It's like really kind of unique. And yeah, I like
especially
that
for mono blue, it's not like pure control or whatever.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of that. I'm going to go with that one.
I really like Vrondis, Rage of Ancients, or Sephiroth of the Hidden Ways. I like the dungeon mechanic quite a bit, but Vrondis just seems like so much fun. I've been trying to build Enrage decks ever since I saw it for the first time with Dinosaurs. And Vrondis might help because it actually makes my choices a little bit less by just putting me in two colors and really focusing and honing in on the Enrage strategy. So I think I might build one of those next.
Definitely. I like this set in general. I feel like the power level on some of them is great. We'll talk about the most powerful commanders we think in a second. But in general, I think the power level can be a little bit lower, which means that we can explore other types of strategies. You know what I mean?
Like have more fun.
Yeah, like Enrage. Like we get to explore Enrage. We get to explore dungeons.
Yep.
You know, I get to do some weird thing with illusions. I like it.
Okay, cool. What do you think is the most powerful commander in this whole set? We actually had the same answer. Spoiler alert. We may as well just say it.
It's Prosper. Yeah. Prosper Tombbound. I don't think it's even close, actually.
Yeah, I was looking at the rest of them. I think you are right. Now, there's maybe an argument because like maybe Klouth Unrivaled Ancient has a way to go infinite the moment it hits the battlefield and attacks. But Prosper overall just has all the things we're looking for on the card. It has card draw and it also has mana ramp. And it's in Rakdos. So it means it's extra powerful because Rakdos typically does not have access to this amount of value on the commander card.
This really is so much value. I mean, when seeing it played and playing against it, playing with it a little bit, it's just like the treasure generation that you get is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the treasures are just so good. They play really, really well. They let you build up treasure and then have more explosive turns later on in the game. And that's how you win games of Commander, is by having turns where you do a lot more. It's not just like one big play. It's like, oh, I answer this, I do this, and I do this. And then suddenly you're in this like big position.
Yeah.
Treasure lets you have the mana to get there. And the exile effects, the card draw lets you get there too. So I think it's great.
The card is just good. If you watch the Game Nights episode where Prosper gets played, you will very much see just how much value that thing can generate. All right, to the listeners, let us know which commander card excites you the most, whether or not you're going to be building any new decks or you have some sweet synergies that we missed. Also, make sure you check out DJ's Jumbo Commander channel so you can see the deck techs as well on cards like Min, Wily, Illusionist. I keep wanting to say Willy Illusionist because there's two N's and then Illusionist has two L's. But that just doesn't work.
We'll just go for it. It's Willy. It's fine.
Willy, Min Illusionist. And always, of course, make sure you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. You enter that into your URL, blammo, you're on the website, and you can peruse it to your heart's content. Order whatever you want, especially if you're looking to build one of these decks, or maybe you just want the precons to play against your friends. Lots of fun stuff there.
And while you're there, go ahead and check out Ultra Pro. They're another sponsor. And look, if you are going to go play cards at your local game store, if you want to be able to show off your deck, you're going to want to show off this amazing art from Forgotten Adventures in Forgotten Realms.
Oh yeah,
like you're gonna want a gelatinous cube playmat. You're gonna want
such a cool playmat.
Like, isn't it so cool?
And everyone, right? The moment I saw that art, I was like, gelatinous cube, awesome.
Like, so you're gonna want your stuff to look good and be protected. So go ahead and check out Ultra Pro.
All right, thanks so much, everyone. No end step today, but there is a cleanup step where we get to help. Thank the people that help us here at the Command Zone office. So big thanks to Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred the Sokka, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, and Gaurav Galati. And of course, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who helps make the Living Card animations that live behind us here on set. You can find him at Living Cards MTG.
All right, everyone. Oof. Thank you so much for joining us. There's been a lot of adventures in Forgotten Realms, but you know, we're ready to finish this up and move on to other stuff. I'm super excited.
Yeah, me too. The adventure was well worth it. And we leveled up, right?
We totally did.
Stats.
I went deeper into the dungeon for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, hope to see you all very, very soon.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.